everyone. We'll resume the hearing, and at this stage we're hearing from New Zealand Dairy Farmers Association. And just before we commence with your submission, we just have one minor issue to deal with here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm a member of New Zealand Dairy Farmers Association, but I've had no input into the presentation or the submissions that they've put in.
Okay. So on that basis, having raised that issue, I'm happy that there's no conflict of interest that we need to address in that regard. If anyone has a different opinion, they're welcome to let us know. Yeah. Thank you very much for your submission and your evidence, all of which we've read. You're welcome, obviously, to speak to that material. You don't need to reread the evidence to us. In fact, I won't allow you to do that because it would defeat the purpose of pre-circulation and pre-reading, which is to make things efficient. So I'll hand it over to you, and you can maybe introduce yourselves, tell us what your banning order is going to be, if you have any additional information that you wish to table and read out to us, that's fine. And also, if you want to highlight key points for us, that's fine also. If you are happy, we'll take questions from each of your witnesses as you go. We'd rather do that than wait till you've all spoken, if that's okay with you. But other than that, I'll just hand it over to you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the submission. My name is Richard Cook. I'm married to Peggy. We have three children. None of you want to go farming, I might add. We have 40 hectares at Rollbush and lease 60 hectares at Riversdale and farm red deer with a few fellows. I'm the current chairman of the Southland branch of the New Zealand Deer Farm Association. I'll just outline the speakers. I'll be outlining a quick outline of the importance of Southland for the deer industry, and some comments on the recommendations from the Section 42A. Lindsay Fung is going to present after me, followed by Simon Wright from Fairlight, Andrew Kay from Tau Tau, and I'll complete the session with a summary about farm and bio management plans.
Great. Okay.
So, firstly, I want to reiterate the importance of deer farming in Southland and Southland to deer farming in New Zealand. There are approximately 270,000 hectares farmed with deer over 456 properties, which makes Southland the second largest province for deer farming in New Zealand. See from the map up there the distribution of deer farms in the Southland District. Most of the deer farming is mixed dry stock operations where deer provide a balance and diversity and also a mix to suit the environment on different farms. 35% of all venison processing is carried out in Southland. Southland produces approximately 20% of the venison in New Zealand. I think 23%. 20% of New Zealand velvet is produced in the Southland District. Also, there is a large number of, quite a high number of trophy deer are supplied from the Southland District, which are destined for adventure tourism hunting. This is a low impact, high value industry. The hunters come for a short time and spend quite a lot of money with little adverse effects on the region. So deer are versatile and multi-purpose species. There are a number of established deer genetics and studs operations in Southland. They sell stags predominantly and also breeding hinds throughout the country. The Southland Branch Deer Farmers Association have taken a proactive approach to the Southland Water and Land Plan, with members present in the initial steering group. And I would say the level of environmental awareness of our members is very high. So I now wish to talk about Rule 70, stock crossing.
Yep.
The rules stated that from July 2019, the crossing occurs less frequently than once per week. The issue we have with this is, while deer are generally driven across streams very infrequently, it's possible during times, for example, scanning or weaning, that it may occur more than once per week. Over the whole year, it'd be very minimal, but it could occur, for example, for scanning hinds, they may be brought down from higher country, crossed through a stream, scanned, crossed back across the stream, back, and then left there for another further 3 or 4 months. We would ask that that phrase be deleted from the rules. Rule 23, winter grazing. We feel this rule should take into account stocking rate over the whole property. We feel like good management practice would be the best approach, because consents add cost and uncertainty, and the process in itself will do little to improve environmental outcomes. I feel a percentage would be fairer to landowners and would cover those who don't take on extra stock for wintering. Rule 23 and 25, setback distances. The Section 42A report recommends a vegetated buffer strip of 20 metres where the slope is 9 degrees or more. However, buffer strips are only as effective as a vegetated cover and intensity of rainfall. So we acknowledge that the council science team recognise the role of good management practice and that these can reduce the amount of setback required. Grazing progressively towards a water body reduces sedimentation and phosphorus by over 80%. We ask if there is flexibility over the setback, which allows for the use of strategic grazing and perhaps sediment traps. Farm environment management practice plans, Rule 20. The time frame for completion is too short. While it is understandable that alignment with FMU limits setting processes would be helpful, NZDFA Southland remains concerned and seriously doubts the ability for 3,000 farms to complete farm environment management plans within 4 years. These concerns were raised in the original submission and are repeated for emphasis. NZDFA Southland has concerns that the current availability of farm environmental management advisory services for sheep, beef and deer farms is extremely limited and is already in demand in other regions across the country. Advisory services need to cover both farm environment planning and nutrient management. Capability in both these areas is further skewed towards dairy farm systems, with sheep and beef systems as distant second and deer systems most poorly represented. As a result, it is quite possible that many deer farmers will not have the ability to provide the required management plan within the given deadlines and would therefore have to apply for a resource consent as a discretionary activity. NZDFA Southland does not oppose the requirement to have FEMPs and acknowledges their value to formally record good management practices appropriate to the particular risks on farm, but it strongly disagrees with an outcome that could see many deer farmers have to undertake a costly consenting process due to a lack of advisor capability and capacity, which is beyond the control of deer farmers and NZDFA Southland.
Just in terms of, are you happy if we put questions we have to you now?
Yeah? Certainly. Yeah.
Okay. I'll just start with one. We've, Commissioner Allison and I, we've sat on a number of Environment Canterbury hearings similar to this, and we've had presentations from New Zealand deer farmers there as well, and we've had the document that you've tabled given to us there as well. And the comment we made there was it's an extremely comprehensive and well put together document. But I can't recall, does this result, when it's applied to an individual deer farmer, does that result in a formal management plan being produced at the end of the process?
No.
Right. So you would use this to help inform a farm environment plan prepared under whatever region the deer farmer happens to
sit in? Yes. Most farmers being mixed deer and sheep and beef, the land environment plan outlined by or produced by Beef and Lamb is most commonly used as a template for deer farming. Yes.
So of the, was it 450 odd deer farmers in this region, how many of those would have done a Beef and Lamb environment plan?
I couldn't say. I would say a considerable number would have. I've been to two afternoons and completed part, some of it, up to part two.
Right. Well, I'll just see if we have any other questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when you were speaking, I was wondering whether a lot of the if farm management plans could actually be done by the farmers themselves, and which is a lot of it's just recording boundaries and crossings and fencings and those sorts of things. And where needed, you would actually ask for some extra help
on
some of the more technical stuff. So I just wondered whether that is part of the answer to the question you raised. In the 4-year period, we can do so much, but it may not be totally finished. Is that a fair assumption?
Yes.
So thank you for that. I'm just not 100% sure you talked about stock crossings. I'm not 100% sure if I fully understand what you're saying around stock crossings. Is that more in the high country that you're bringing down and going across streams than the lowland intensive case country?
Yes,
it would be quite a different regime.
Mm. Yeah. I think in the lower country, I think it's more likely that you would be crossing a stream more commonly. And in that situation, I think most farmers would have a culvert or bridge situation there.
Because you didn't mention belting, so I presume that your belting is actually quite the bigger animals are used in and out on a regular basis.
Yes, you are. So, I mean, that's another situation where you could be crossing a stream more commonly than once a week.
Would it be fair to say then that the idea of a critical source area and targeting those places that you cross more often would be where you'd put your energy, and some of the other places which are very occasionally crossed, you would actually leave. So your farm management plan would actually cater for, say, oh, this is what I've done in this area for this reason and the other areas. So that actually picks up a large part of the discussion, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. The concern, when I thought about it, the concern I had was, let's say, somebody's fishing out at the headwaters of a stream boundary the deer farm, and somebody happens to be scanning or weaning on that day, and they bring the deer in, they do what they need to do, and they run them back across the stream that same day. Under the planned rules, he would have cause to complain. Just because he happens to be there on that one day, he's seen two crossings in the same day, it doesn't comply. Even though that's the first time it's happened for 3 months and it won't happen for another 3 months, there's potential problems there.
Excuse me, by the way, Mr. Chair, if I could elaborate on some of the points that Richard was making around stock crossing. So the Velveton example is a really good example, and I think where we have sort of approached it is looking at the stock crossing as an activity. You have to consider the impact based on the duration of the crossing and the frequency of the crossings and the size of the herd. So particularly around Velvet, there'll be small mobs of animals taken into the deer shed to be velveted and then rested and then back into their paddocks. So you might be looking at mobs of 10, you might be looking at maybe mobs of 20, 30 or something like that. The other point is the behaviour of deer as they cross. They don't tend to walk, they run, and you'd actually be driving across, they jump. If you have one and a half metre stream, they'll probably jump 2 metres. So you know, by and large, there's not a huge amount of impact. So while the frequency of crossings might be quite important around whether or not you bridge in covert under intensive farming situations, for deer behaviour and particularly in more extensive operations, it's not the only issue, and it's probably of a minor issue when you compare it against the size of the herd and then the deer behaviour. And to re-emphasise, Richard, when if you look at deer sheds with its frequent stock movement, pretty much any crossing is commented. So I think there's a recognition of the potential of environmental impacts where there's intensive use.
Thank you for that. On their tour around south, and we saw deer being wintered, and they wintered in different ways. Some were behind a wire, multiple wires, or six or seven wires.
Yep.
And others were basically left in an area, effectively had the whole paddock for a period of time. How do you see those two systems fitting under the present intensification rules for intensive winter grazing?
Yes, deer behaviour is a little different from cattle and sheep in that if you give them a strip, a narrow strip, they do tend to walk up and down that strip quite a bit. So that can damage the crop and course, and when you get a poorer utilisation of the crop, and also produce a bit more mud, a bit more damage. Whereas if you give them a greater area, they tend to be a lot more settled, and there's less walking and consequently less damage as a rule. Yeah, so everybody has their own systems for. That they would, but generally, farmers will work out a system that suits their situation and their soil.
So, in your view, both would regard as good management practice?
Yes, in the right sequences.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
Just in terms of that stock crossing, in that clause in Rule 70, clearly you're bringing stock in for a purpose. Good husbandry, you've got to get them back out.
Yes.
Onto the block. So do you think there's an anomaly there?
Yes.
That it's not allowing?
So yes.
If we looked at that. Yes, Dick?
I'm not sure. Could you just repeat that?
Yeah, well, I think clearly it allows you to bring the stock in, but it doesn't allow you to take them back out.
Yes, yes.
That's the issue.
Yes, right.
So yep. If we look at that.
Yes, from a welfare, yeah, from you don't want to have them hanging around for a week before you can run them back.
Yes, so there's a problem.
Yes, there is a problem. Yes.
Create another issue.
Yes. it would be detriment, you know, you will have, perhaps put them in the holding paddock or something and feed them or whatever, you know, you'll get more damage, more environmental damage.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, it's very, a lot of very good information, very useful. Thank you for that. And I do have a question. I'm not sure if you'll be the best person to answer it, but you say that with good management practices, sediment and phosphorus losses can be significantly reduced. Do you have any data that quantifies the range of losses of these contaminants from fodder crops that have been grazed by deer over the winter period or from situations where deer have access to streams in Southland? Any data, any like amount of sediment that's lost in a typical winter grazing situation and how that can be mitigated?
So in terms of any data, no, there isn't. Winter grazing for deer isn't particularly well researched. The only data which we could point to would be from the Pastoral 21 work, which was done by Dairy NZ research on sheep and beef in dairy systems, which demonstrated that strategic grazing could reduce phosphorus by up to 80%. We do have some data around sediment and E. coli and phosphorus and nitrogen coming off from fenced and unfenced deer systems going into a community covenant. So we'll present, we can talk to that later on. I think Richard in his concluding remarks refers to that, and there's a handout of the Focus Farm newsletter where that comes from.
So is that data and some of the information you've given to us, is it?
Yes. No, so this is new evidence. It's just a one-pager from the Focus Farm newsletter in 2005 from the first environment focus farm down here in Southland. But that's not in relation to winter grazing, it's just different catchments which are fenced or unfenced.
In relation to access to streams?
Yes.
So, I'm sorry, have we got that?
Yep. Yes.
It's in today's package.
All right. I've got some questions for you, Dr. Fane, but perhaps I can ask you later when you've given your...
And no further questions from me, so now we can have the next witness.